This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show, another hour of the Jesse Kelly Show on a wonderful Monday. And we have a bunch of stuff we're going to get to this hour. I am going to get to some emails. I'm going to talk to you about a very particular set of skills I have. Brandon Darby's coming up about a half hour from now, but we don't have time for any of that right now. Because you know what time it is. It is time for Medal of Honor Monday, where we honor one of our heroes. We remember his name and his deeds. We tell our children about what he did and give them something wonderful to aspire to so they don't try to be the YouTube star they're currently watching on their phones when they should be listening to the Jesse Kelly Show. And do remember, you can email your love, your hate, your death threats to jesse@jessekellyshow.com. You can also email in Medal of Honor recommendations if you have ones that are close to you, friend, neighbor from your hometown, just ones you like. You're welcome to email those in. This guy did. He said, Jesse, I'd like to recommend Army Medic Specialist 5 James C. McLaughlin for Medal of Honor Monday. This hero is from South Haven, Michigan, was awarded the Medal of Honor in 2017 for actions that took place over 3 days in May of 1969. Although he was wounded the first and second days of a three-day battle, he kept fighting, saved the lives of 10 men, took out an RPG location. After his tour of duty in Vietnam, he spent 40 years as a teacher. How about that? So without further ado, let's find out what Mr. James C. McLaughlin of South Haven, Michigan, did in Vietnam.
Ready, aim, fire.
Honoring those who went above and beyond, it's Medal of Honor Monday.
Private First Class James C. McLaughlin distinguished himself by acts of gallantry and intrepidity at the risk of his life above and beyond the call of duty from May 13th to 15th, 1969, while serving as a combat medic with Company C, 3rd Battalion, 21st Infantry, 196th Light Infantry Brigade, Americal Division. The company air assaulted into an area near Tam Kai in Noi Yon Hill. On May 13th, with complete disregard for his life, he ran 100 meters in an open field through heavy fire to rescue a comrade too injured to move and carried him to safety. That same day, 2nd Platoon was ordered to search the area near Noi Yon Hill when the platoon commander was ambushed by a large North Vietnamese army force and sustained heavy casualties. With complete disregard for his life and personal safety, Private First Class McLaughlin led two Americans into the safety of a trench while being wounded by shrapnel from a rocket-propelled grenade. He ignored a direct order to stay back and braved an enemy assault while moving into the kill zone on four more occasions to extract wounded comrades. He treated the injured, prepared the evacuation, and though bleeding heavily from shrapnel wounds on his head and body, refused evacuation to safety in order to remain at the battle site with his fellow soldiers who were heavily outnumbered by North Vietnamese Army forces. On May 14th, the platoon was again ordered to move out towards Noi Yon Hill. Private First Class McLaughlin was wounded a second time by small arms fire and shrapnel from a rocket-propelled grenade while rendering aid to two soldiers in an open rice paddy. In the final phases of the attack, two companies from the 2nd North Vietnamese Army Division and an element of 700 soldiers from a Viet Cong regiment descended upon Company C's position on three sides. Private First Class McLaughlin, again with complete disregard for his life, went into the crossfire numerous times throughout the battle to extract wounded soldiers while also fighting the enemy. His relentless and courageous actions inspired and motivated his comrades to fight for their survival. When supplies ran low, Private First Class McLaughlin volunteered to hold a blinking strobe light in an open area as a marker for a nighttime resupply route, good grief, exposing his body. During the morning darkness of May 15, Private First Class McLaughlin knocked out a rocket-propelled grenade position with a grenade, fought and eliminated enemy soldiers, treated numerous casualties, kept two critically wounded soldiers alive during the night, and organized the dead and wounded for evacuation at daylight. His timely and courageous actions were instrumental in saving the lives of his fellow soldiers. Private First Class McLaughlin's personal heroism, professional competence, and devotion to duty are in keeping with the highest traditions of military service and reflect great credit upon himself, the AmeriCal Division, and the United States Army. My man had himself a good few days, huh? Oh, it was a horrible few days, but that gone. And you know, you just know, when he took out that RPG, you know that was totally the one who wounded him twice already. And you know he was just stewing about it. I'm totally guessing on this, but you know he was just stewing about it. I'm going to get that. I'm telling you right now, I'm going to get that freaking guy. You've got a shrapnel wound in your head and your body, and you're just thinking, I'm going to kill him before I die. I swear on my life I will. 40 years as a teacher. It's wonderful how often that seems to happen. And maybe I'm blowing this up too much in my mind, because I know guys who I was in Iraq with, they moved on to be teachers. I've heard of other guys in my kids' school. Veterans are going into the teaching profession. If you are a veteran, perhaps you're looking for something. You know, there's nobody better to guide young minds than you. Consider, if possible, going into the teaching profession. Just consider it. That's all I'm saying. Consider it. Also, consider this. Communists lie about everything at all times.
In my state included, which is one of the most blessed and cursed states as it relates to climate, we're on the tip of the spear of climate change. Simultaneous droughts and simultaneous floods. The hots are getting a lot hotter. The drys drier. You saw one of
It's droughting and flooding, of course.
The most devastating wildfires in American history in the middle of winter in Los Angeles.
Yeah, they already caught the arsonist. But remember how the communist views the concept of truth, words themselves. What is the point of all of it? You know why you tell the truth. You believe, whatever your belief system, that is right. You don't want to lie because it is wrong. But the communist does not share your value system.
I think our reverence for the truth might have become a bit of a distraction that is preventing us from finding consensus and getting important things done.
Did you know over 80% of wildfires, some say the number is north of 90, are caused by man? And I don't mean your SUV. I'm talking arsonists setting them intentionally. I'm talking about people flicking cigarette butts out the window, maybe starting a campfire when it's dry in the mountains without any idea what you're getting into. But all those wildfires, man's lighting them all. But it gives communists the opportunity to destroy more of your economy, steal more of your liberty, and loot the treasury in the interest of handing it out to their large donors in the solar industry. So they'll hop on private jets like Gavin Newsom did and fly all the way down to Brazil and say things like this.
In my state included, which is one of the most blessed and cursed states as it relates to climate, we're on the tip of the spear of climate change. Simultaneous droughts and simultaneous floods. The hots are getting a lot hotter, the drys drier. You saw one of the most devastating wildfires in American history in the middle of winter in Los Angeles in January. 100-mile-an-hour winds attached to fire.
The fire hydrants ran out of water. They already caught the guy who lit the fire. California won't clear out the dead underbrush. 100% man-made. And he knows that. If you sat him down and hooked him up to a lie detector, he knows everything I just said. But remember, that doesn't matter, this thing of truth.
I think our reverence for the truth might have become a bit of a distraction that is preventing us from finding consensus and getting important things done.
He's trying to get things done, you see. Doesn't have time for the facts. All right. We are going to get to some economic matters. We're going to get to this reporting about the would-be Trump assassin. We still have to get to Brandon Darby. There's just so much to get to on the show. But first, we have to make sure we know names, don't we? It's the Medal of Honor Monday. I thought it'd be a good time. Have you ever heard of the name U.S. Army Warrant Officer 1 Stuart Wayman? You ever heard of that name? Well, there was a mid-air collision. He was in Army, graduated Army Aviation School, all that, mid-air collision. He lost his life. Left behind a wife and 3 sons. You, by giving $11 a month to Tunnel to Towers, paid off the mortgage on the family's home. Doesn't bring Stuart back. Nothing ever can bring Dad back for Christmas Day. Not saying it does, but... Man, you want to talk about a way to ease at least some kind of a burden on the family. That's what Tunnel to Towers does, and this is their season. The season of hope. It's time. $11 a month is all they ask for. T2T.org. T2T.org. We'll be back.
You're listening to The Oracle.
You're going to love this one. It's a scream, baby.
The Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a wonderful, wonderful Monday, a Medal of Honor Monday. Remember, if you missed any part of the show, you can download the whole thing on iHeart, Spotify, iTunes. I shouldn't breeze over this when I bring up gigantic communist lies and when I talk about communists lying about everything at all times. It has had a devastating effect on America, specifically America's mental health. And so I just played you. I'm not going to play it again. I can't stand his stupid voice. Gavin Newsom flying down to Brazil and saying California's fire, the Palisades fire, was caused by climate change, which is not right lie. It's started by an arson. But setting that aside, this is what these lies, these constant lies, the world of lies the communists create for your liberal Aunt Peggy, this is the result.
It doesn't take long for me to pick up on this. People...
This is a psychotherapist on Fox News, by the way.
It doesn't take long for me to pick up on this. People are obsessed with Trump. They're fixated. They're hyper-fixated on Trump. And they talk about some of the features of this disorder. They can't sleep. They feel traumatized by Mr. Trump. They feel restless. I had one patient who said she couldn't enjoy a vacation because anytime she saw Trump in the news or on her device, she felt triggered. So this is a profound pathology, and I would even go so far as to call it the defining pathology of our time.
How devastating. And if you're one of these people, one of these Democrats in the media, one of these Democrat politicians, he told us to inject bleach. He said Nazis were very fine people. He colluded with Russia. I want you to know you're a bad person. You are. You're a terrible human being, and the things you do on behalf of the revolution are really evil things, because you know what you're doing is you're abusing disabled people. Those are Democrat voters. Mentally disabled people, like Democrat voters, they're susceptible to your lies, and so you tell them huge lies, you wreck their soul, wreck their mental health, and all for power. It's very evil. Oracle, I've been very disappointed with Trump 2.0 deportation numbers, but think you made a great point acknowledging the runway needed to be built up to the mass deportation machine. What is your concern level regarding deportation numbers wavering next year in the midterms? I'm worried the administration won't have the stomach to ramp up the numbers and increase. Okay, thanks for all you do. Yeah, like I said, and I mean, I don't want to make a presidency, a 4-year presidency, into something that's overly simple, because the president has so many jobs and they're all important. So I'm not trying to make this overly simple. But for my overly simple mind, if you ask me, hey, what would be a metric to measure how successful the Trump administration is, Trump 2.0? I would say, is he going to deport 10 million plus people? Now, I know that's overly simple, but as I've explained a million times before, the mass deportation of 50 million people plus is necessary to save the country. If we do it, we do save the country. If we can't do it, we have no country left to save. It has to be done. So far, the Trump administration has been deporting people. Remember, when you count self-deportations, we're over 2 million. And he's building an immigration machine that will help him deport more. That's why they're beefing up 150,000 new ICE agents. That's why your leadership shakeups. Every indication is that they are 100% committed to mass deportations and they intend to get it done. That's, we've seen nothing, and I would tell you if we had, that shows they're deviating from that. As of right now, they're building the machine, the deportation machine. So if we're just going to follow this logically, if that's 2 million this year, that's 3 million next year, right? Maybe 4 million the following year. But whatever. My number's 10 million. You ask me if I'm going to consider him a successor president, I'm going to tell you that I need 10 million deportations, and I think there's a chance he's going to do it. He looks committed to doing it. He does. Got to give credit where it's due. If we're going to insult, you know, the Epstein this and mishandled that or insult here, got to give credit where it's due. This is the most committed administration I've ever seen to deportation. They are. Now, your question is, are they going to get squeamish in the midterms? I haven't seen any indication they're going to get squeamish. But we may have a little feather in our cap that we weren't thinking about. Trump is a lame duck. He's never going to be a politician again. He's never going to be president ever, ever again. And I know there are powerful interests around him who want to stay in politics, J.D. Vance and these types. I understand there are other people who have aspirations for the future. I get that. But most of this comes from Trump himself, not the House, not the Senate, not even J.D. Vance. Most of it comes from Trump himself. I don't think Donald Trump wants to be wiped out in the midterms, so he has some motivation there. But I think Donald Trump understands, or at least the indication is right now that he understands, we have to have mass deportations to save the country. And remember, if he gets to 10 million, that's roughly half the number Joe Biden brought in. Because you can't bail water as fast as it comes in. We would need another 4-8 years to finish up just what Joe Biden did. And then we got to work on everyone who came in beforehand. We have years and years, a decade more. Can he get to 10 in 4 years? I think he can. If they start to wuss out in the midterms, hey, no more of this. Only the really violent ones. Then we're probably pretty cooked. Have you, by the way, heard about Chalk's Black Friday special? Did you know? Yeah, you've heard me talk about chocolate powder before. Chocolate powder is freaking glorious. It's obviously chocolate flavored, but it's good for you. It's packed full of vitamins and minerals. You want to start your day with chocolate powder. You'd put it in a glass of milk or a smoothie. I'd put it in a smoothie every morning. Chalk has a Black Friday special running right now during the month of November. When you go to chalk.com and use the promo code Jesse, you get a free bag of chocolate powder when you subscribe. CHOQ.com, get a subscription, something, male vitality stack or female vitality stack, whatever. Chalk.com, promo code Jesse, free bag of chocolate powder. Go, make it happen. Now, there was all kinds of video running around online of a protest in Mexico. Looked a little spicy. People were talking about Viva la Revolución. What, Chris? I almost said it perfectly.
Buenas tardes.
Let's ask Brandon Darby about that next.
He doesn't care if you believe him, but he's right. Jesse Kelly.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Monday. Gosh, Chris, turn it off. I knew Darby picked it. I knew Van Halen is so overrated. Joining me now, my friend Brandon Darby, of course, with the Cartel Chronicles, Breitbart. Brandon, come on. Van Halen, what are we doing here?
I know, but he picked it, not me. Your producer picked it.
All right. First of all, is there a group of freedom fighters getting ready to cast off the government of Mexico? Because I saw a bunch of protesters out there, and then a bunch of bad internet rumors started floating around. What's happening down in Mexico City?
Well, I started to see that, too. I was on Twitter, X, or whatever they call it nowadays, and I saw that, you know, Alex Jones said that there was about to be a revolution, and a number of other folks were tweeting out videos saying there's about to be a revolution, and it turns out it's just an average run-of-the-mill protest, which is common in Mexico City. You know, elections are coming up and the parties are whipping up their bases to protest one thing or another about the current president. So not any different than what we routinely see in D.C. You know, some arrests were made, people get wild, and there's always revolutionaries in Mexico, right? But I don't think that's what this is, not at this time.
Okay, so that's actually why I wanted to bring you on. One, to clarify some of the information that gets tossed out there. But two, we don't understand, Americans don't, I know you do, the politics of Mexico, of Mexicans. Is there a Republican and Democrat? Is it 20 different parties? Who are the parties down there?
Right. So there's a number of different parties, but what you have to understand is their right-wingers are kind of akin to our Democrats. And then their left-wingers are kind of akin to Ocasio-Cortez. And then their ultra-left-wingers, like, they still have resistance movements, you know, like the Zapatistas. And so their resistance movements are, you know, Marxist and really, really, really far, far left. But the politics there really, you know, we're saying this is why they outlaw guns. It's because no one is really... No one really feels represented unless you're very wealthy there, right? Like you have communities along the U.S.-Mexico border. They call it the frontera, right? The borderlands. And they are just completely underrepresented in their government. Like what their needs are does not seem to matter. The only time that their needs are taken care of in the border communities, their security needs, is when people in the U.S., and yes, I mean us, right, as in Breitbart, make a big deal out of something that's going on or the cartel, a various cartel controlling a city and doing bad things. And then Mexico will send its military in, right? And then if that military starts doing corrupted things and we report on it, then Mexico sends their Navy in, right, their Marines. That's the only time they're really represented is when people in the U.S. Raise an issue with it. So, you know, not a lot of hope for the politics in Mexico at this time. It's all very corrupted. All of the parties have had their ties to cartels when they were in positions of power. The current party, AMLO's party, which is what Sheinbaum is part of, their current president, is very well connected to various drug cartels, specifically CJMG. The last president was very well connected to the Sinaloa cartel. And this is just how it goes there. But back to what we were talking about with the protests, this is a recurrent problem we have. Like I, as someone who's covered this for so many years, I feel very successful that, you know, the candidate that was largely, you know, supported by Breitbart or given a fair shake by Breitbart and no one else ends up becoming president and then cares about the issues we cared about, right? I love that everyone focuses on the border. I love that everyone is trying to focus on cartels, but it is very frustrating to spend so many years developing sources and knowing what's going on there. And people just take cheap shots and find a video of a protest and say, oh, it means this. And oh, the cartels are doing this, or this video is the cartel doing this. And almost none of it is accurate. So what we do is we just, every time it happens, we just run a headline like, no, Mexico is not about to have a revolution, or no, the cartel did not just do this, or no, you know, we just have to run these kind of debunking headlines that gently debunk people while also appreciating the fact that they're trying to cover it, right? We just want them to definitely cover it, but you know, do a little work, right? Don't take cheap shots and just find something on Twitter and run with it like it's, you like you have the inside scoop or something, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, it gets frustrating when you've put in the work and you've done the hours and days on end, and then somebody just kind of blows the whole thing up just for cheap clicks, of course. Yeah, that would
well,
grate on me.
It's a pretty common thing, but we are very happy that people are covering it. We're happy that, you know, they wouldn't be covering it if it didn't get clicks. And the fact that it gets clicks means that that we have, not only have we been successful, but others who have tried to cover this issue have been successful. It means that the Republican Party and Donald Trump, that wing of the Republican Party, has been successful in getting people to care about Mexico-based cartels and our border. So there's a lot of positives about it. But no, we don't think that this time that this is on the level of pulling the president out of the palace or anything like that. No.
That really sucks, because I was getting ready to yell Viva la Revolucion many times on the radio just to work on my Spanish. What, Chris? I was going to shout it and play mariachi music, and that failed. Well, all that talk about Mexico, and now we're about to leave there, Brandon, because El Salvador is a place that obviously it's getting a lot of pub in on the right, because it's a place that went from very dangerous to very safe, and we're going to assign very simple things to that. But I figured, here's my question. Losing that many criminals in the same region of the world surely created a vacuum of some kind. What has been the fallout? What did they do, and what has been the fallout from it?
You know, man, there's a county north of Austin, Texas, called Williamson County, right, where Round Rock is and so forth. Mm-hmm. And most people, like when I was younger, people I knew who had marijuana or whatever, they would drive around Williamson County. Nobody wanted to drive through Williamson County, right? Because they are so strict on enforcing the laws and pulling people over, and they are so strict on actually prosecuting every crime that yes, they put all their criminals away, but other criminals don't want to go there, right? And I think that that's a lot of what's happened in El Salvador. They got Bukele, I believe his name is, a president. He went in, he built a prison, he cracked down on MS-13. This was a country that was overrun with MS-13. He cracked down on them in such a significant way. I'm sure there's some human rights abuses. I'm sure there's overreactions, and there's probably a few people who maybe shouldn't have gotten caught up in it. I'm sure there's all kinds of dirty mess that's happening. But, you know, we're in a situation looking at them where we can judge, because we have a functioning country, right? As imperfect as we are. They mm-hmm. did not have one, right? So it's many have said it must be nice to make a decision between right and wrong or good and bad, because most of the world has to make decisions between bad and worse, right? And that's a complicated issue. So he built a prison and he started to incarcerate MS-13 gang members and crack down on them in a brutal way. And now his country is flourishing because of it. So I get from our liberal, neoliberal sensibilities, we're like, hey, there are human rights violations, kind of like the drug boat thing. I totally get it. But all of those loved ones who watch their kids like die from fentanyl and cocaine and heroin, I promise you, a lot of them feel a sense of justice when those boats bringing poison into our country are blown up by Donald J. Trump, right? And that's a lot of the situation that's going on in El Salvador. It's just the way things have to be. And, you know, I don't want to curse on air, so I won't, but everyone likes to do lion stuff, or everyone wants to be a lion until it's time to do lion stuff. Now, there's a curse word in there that people usually use, but we'll say stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone wants to be a lion until it's time to do lion stuff. And that president, he did the lion stuff. He did what he needed to do for his country. And that's really, to me, it's that simple.
I'm going to go there. I'm going to visit, and I'm going to try all the food. That's what I'm going to do. Brandon, thank you, my man. I appreciate you, as always. Chris, what do we know about El Salvadorian food? I haven't heard anything. That's generally not a good sign. I mean, look, I saw there's a place in Houston. I don't know if it's still open, but it was Taste of Nigeria. So clearly everybody's getting a restaurant at this point in time. But El Salvadorian food, I bet it's delicious. We'll be back.
You're listening to The Oracle.
You're going to love this one. It's a scream, baby.
The Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a wonderful Monday. Remember, you can email us, jesse@jessekellyshow.com. So, I am curious about this El Salvadorian food. Chris says it's all going to taste like Mexican food. I think that's a little stereotypical of Latino people, Chris. I don't think that that's necessarily accurate. No, beans and beef aren't delicious. Beef is delicious. Beans are disgusting. I'm assuming there are going to be some tortillas. I'm assuming there's going to be cheese. There's going to be cheese, right? I want to try it. But why don't we have any El Salvadorian restaurants? That's a little frightening. That's one. Two, before I get back to the stories, I have to confess something. I believe I inadvertently misused one of my really special skills, and I feel terrible about it. Looking back on it, I think I would have done something different. I almost feel like maybe Superman shaking someone's hand a little too hard and he broke it because he forgot about his super strength. So here's what happened. I am conscious of the fact that I am enormous. I am 6'8". I know that is, it can be intimidating, especially for women, if someone like that is behind you for any reason. Because of that, I try to be conscious of, super, super conscious of, I try not to stand right behind them. I try not to stand too close to anybody. I'm conscious of the fact that women feel more like prey than men do for obvious reasons, and especially because there's a lot of scumbag predators out there. So if I'm in public, especially if I'm alone, if there's a woman walking in front of me, I will give way more distance than I probably need to give, because I understand if I'm within 10 feet, you know, that sounds far. You look around and there's a 6'8" guy 10 feet behind you as a woman. I understand that can freak you out, and I don't ever want to freak a woman out. I would feel bad about that. Now, let's set that part aside. Let's remember this part before we get back to the politics. I am much more covert than you think I am. I don't know what it is, Chris. Maybe it's an athletic thing, even though I'm not athletic. Maybe this is a hidden athleticism where I'm very, very quiet. I move. It's not intentional, I should note. This is why I think it's just one of these God-given abilities. I move with such stealth. I'm constantly freaking Ob out in the house. She's always yelping when I walk in the room. I didn't think I was doing anything wrong. She just didn't hear me coming because I almost glide. I'll put it that way, almost glide around without sound, similar to a ninja like in the movies. I'm walking into the building. This was not yesterday. This is Friday. I forgot to tell you this on Friday. I'm walking into the building on Friday. There's a lady walking in front of me. Right at the entrance of our building, there's a trash can. Obviously, stop, throw your trash in there. I'm walking behind her from the parking lot into the building. I have given her a distance like I always do, conscious of the fact there's a young lady in front of me. I don't want her to think, oh, wow, who's the Jolly Green Giant ogre behind her? So I've stayed safely back. But she stops at the trash can. Well, what am I supposed to do? I can't stop there awkwardly now. But I naively, in my mind, I assumed that surely she heard that I was behind her. Surely she saw my reflection in the glass. Surely she, how could you not see that Bigfoot is behind you? But I forgot about my stealth. I forgot that I wasn't walking through the parking lot. What, Chris? I was gliding through the parking lot. She stops at the trash can. I continue walking towards the door. Maybe in hindsight, I should have been like that kind of thing. Maybe I should have declared myself in some way. Instead, I continue to walk towards the door, walked right up past her to where I'm 2 feet away because she's standing right by the door, and she looks and, whoa, like freaks out back. She's like, oh, sorry, you really scared me. And I said, I'm so sorry. I did not mean to do that. What, Chris? What? I know it's on her, but you can't ask a woman to be self-aware in that way, Chris. No, what? I wasn't trying to be mean. It was not mean. No, especially a younger woman. Have you seen younger women and how not self-aware they are? They'll go to one of the most dangerous big cities. I remember when I went to Boston. I went to Boston, and half the city was young women with noise-canceling headphones on their heads jogging by themselves around the city. And I remember looking and thinking, what kind of world do you think you live in? Who is surrounding you here? You have freaking wolves all over the place. So maybe it's just a young woman thing, but mostly it was my stealth, my gliding. I forgot about it, and I freaked her out, and I feel bad. What? I was trying to be a nice person, Chris. It was a learning experience for her. You know what? She got off easy this time, pal. Maybe next time, who knows? Could be somebody from Somalia. Have you heard of, well, buying things you can touch and feel? You heard of that? Have you heard of gold? Goldco's been trying to scream it at people from the rooftops for a very long time. Over 10 years, they've piled up awards. They've piled up an A-plus rating from the Better Business Bureau, not by being scam artists, by being the honest broker in the precious metals industry. Goldco will get you a free copy of their 2025 gold and silver kit. You might qualify for up to $15,000 in bonus silver. Call 855-817-GOLD or visit jessielikesgold.com. 855-817-GOLD, jessielikesgold.com. We'll be back.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.